That was kind of crazy. 49 p.m. and I'm officially calling this meeting to order. Could we begin our roll call?
Your off tub. David Bateman. Doria Bell. Darcy Benda.
Here.
Nicholas Brennan.
Here.
Suzanne Briere.
Here.
Jonathan Butcher.
Here.
Ana Fernanda Cardenas.
Here.
Ishan Chowdhury.
Here.
Jason Chiburco.
Here.
Laura Duram. Eve DeRosa.
Here.
Ellen Gaynor.
Here.
Andy Garcia Ortiz.
Present.
Irene Gatimi,
Present.
Andrea Hamlin Mott,
Here.
Con Nguyen,
Yes.
Stephanie Rizzou, Christian Turala,
Here.
Wendy Treat.
Present.
Now we can go ahead and start our land acknowledgement. Cornell University, where this meeting is located, is on the traditional homelands of the Gayokono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayokono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. Acknowledge the painful history of the Gayokono disposition and honor the ongoing connection of the Gayokono people, past and present, to these lands and the waters. At this time, I'm going to open the floor for any late additions to the agenda. Seeing that there is none, we're going to close this portion of the meeting and move on to the approval of the November 4th meeting minutes. So these are on the box, those online and in person, and I will entertain any motion to amend or approve. Any motions? Motion to approve. Motion to approve. Can I get a second?
Second.
Second. Okay. Now, with the minutes approved, we can move on for the business of the day. So, first, we have a fuller agenda, and we're gonna first have our Committee on the Future of American Universities. We have representatives coming here to speak with us. Just due to the setup of the room, you're welcome to present there, and you can just signal us to change the slides in accordance. And so let's just welcome them in this meeting here today.
Thank you so much, everybody. I really appreciate the chance. We collectively appreciate the chance to come and engage with you today. This is part of a larger effort to try and engage all of the different constituent assemblies. We've already met with the GPSA and other appointments with everybody else. But we wanted to make sure we had a chance to come meet with the University Assembly to share the project, to begin to open lines of communication, and hopefully get a sense of what we are and what we are not, and where we are all collectively going, hopefully. First, and by way of introductions, my name is Adam Smith. I am in anthropology. I'm also the Associate Dean of the Faculty.
I'm Ariel Avgar. I'm at the ILR School.
I'm David Rand. I'm joined at Bowers and Johnson.
And online we have Eve DeRosa. Eve, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, everyone. Eve DeRosa, Dean of Faculty.
And Rick Geddes. Rick, are you online? No. Okay. All right. Well, let me begin with a short presentation that we have, and then we'll be eager to hear feedback, questions, thoughts, ideas, et cetera. So the next slide, please. This committee was stood up over the course of the summer and into the beginning of the fall by Provost Kavita Bala to begin to examine the long-term future of Cornell, for one thing, but also Cornell as an exemplar of the university in the American system, and that Cornell has a unique legacy as both part of the tradition of land-grant institutions for New York, as also one of the members of the Ivy League, and also as a Research One university. It occupies a lot of different categories within the landscape of American higher education. And one of the thoughts was that thinking through Cornell's future could actually allow us to think through the future of our American universities writ large. We do wanna emphasize that we are a diverse committee. We are composed of 18 faculty brought together across 10 different colleges and schools. So as you can imagine, there is an enormous amount of experience embedded within all that broad diversity and a lot of different ideas, thoughts, and opinions that we're all trying to synthesize and bring together. We are not the Task Force on Institutional Voice, which has already brought forward some of its recommendations. We are also not Resilient Cornell, which is very much in some ways the opposite of this committee. And if we're trying to look at the future, Resilient Cornell is really about the now kind of thing. And then we are also not the Cornell AI Initiative. But that being said, AI and the future of technologies and their impact upon the higher education landscape is absolutely one of the things that we are deeply concerned to address. Let me pause here for a second and let one of our other members of our committee introduce himself. Rick, do you want to just briefly say who you are?
Sure. I'm Rick Geddes. I'm a professor mainly in the Brooks School of Public Policy, founding director of something called the Brooks Center for Infrastructure, and a joint appointment in the Department of Economics.
Sure. Thank you. So let's go on to the next slide. So now that we know what we are and what we aren't. Our purview is really not to think through the challenges of the current moment, except as they bear upon what will be the 20, 25, 50-year legacy of the institution. We are really trying our best to stay future-focused. That is challenging, as you can imagine, in the contemporary environment, to not allow the challenges of the current situation to shape the ways in which we imagine the future, but we really do work hard to try and train our ideas and our imaginations on the long-term future. Next slide. We are also, I think, geographically about our impact. We are very much interested in thinking through the futures of Cornell as a way of thinking about the future of public education, certainly also private nonprofit institutions as well. Private for-profit institutions that are on this map are not within our scope, but certainly any impact upon the American higher education landscape is going to vary widely across the country. Next slide, please. We began our discussions by investigating three issues that our charge from the provost particularly highlighted as challenges that needed to be addressed in order to think through what a university would look like 20, 30, and 50 years in the future. The first was a subcommittee that I was able to co-chair on the loss of public trust. Here we are talking about trust in its most capacious sense. We're interested in the ways in which our educational mission is impacted by loss of trust. Most notably, this comes across through the relationships of debt and cost to access. It certainly has also been part of the current moment in accusations of ideological bias shaping the educational mission of the university. It arises in accusations of research misconduct, and the role that research integrity and the reassertion of research integrity needs to play in the reassertion of public trust. It's certainly much wider and more diffusely understood within the social engagement with universities. How do universities have a public mission to fulfill? And how do we engage with our publics while we at the same time offer ourselves as elite universities that are also locations of enormous wealth? And that the question for that committee was really about ways forward. How do we build connections And how do we utilize the support networks of public trust internally to our university and our capacity to generate enormous reservoirs of trust, both amongst our students and our faculty, but also the way in which university educations are the bedrock of public trust writ large throughout our larger American ecosystem. We use the example sometimes of when you take a medication or whether you get it on an airplane or you get it in a train, you are engaged in an act of trust that somebody with university training, university education, has put in the requisite effort to ensure that those systems would be safe. So that was the trust committee. Let me pass it now to Rick for the government relations.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead. So it's been very interesting and a pleasure to serve on this committee. First of all, I think KB did a great job of assembling the group that really is diverse across the university in terms of background and studies and just an amazing committee. It's really interesting. And of course, I'm a policy monk, so the government University Relations Committee was particularly of interest to me. One thing we've done is take a step back and look at the background. Of course, Cornell was formed under the Morrill Act, I think, of 1862, if I have the date correct, as the land-grant University of the State of New York. So we're automatically a complicated place this way, because if someone says it's Cornell, public or private university, you should say yes. But that comes, obviously, the land grant with a land-grant mission and a very serious public engagement remit that this university has. And, you know, so in that way, we're like Penn State or Ohio State and the other big ones with the land-grant and engagement of the public. That immediately implies an extension mission that we have. I remember serving on the Faculty Senate and the provost at that time, Ken Fox, said there's something like 4,000 Cornell outbuildings that are around the state that are part of our public extension mission. And that founding was actually sort of interestingly on a Germanic model where research and investigation was part of it, but we still have the vestiges of that in the field system. So I don't know, the graduate field system where I'm a member of three or four fields at this point that cross departmental lines and allow me to serve on dissertations in systems engineering and in city and regional planning is very much still embedded in this. Of course, that model continued to change and grow over time in the Revenue Act of 1909, actually. So well over 100 years old, they granted universities tax exempt status. So that's an important government university interaction. But I really think in the 1930s, there was the federal government recognized universities as powerful engines to do research. And there was a famous 1945 report called Science, the Endless Frontier, a report to the president on a program of post-war scientific research. So this is after Second World War, into the Cold War. And I was stressed to the committee that the United States made a decision the federal government partnering more with research universities rather than big national labs. We have those, but the partnership with research universities to facilitate high-level research was a conscious policy decision that we still have. And we've long helped to facilitate both federal and state research initiatives through, I would say, a loosely defined agreement and not even on paper, but it is sort of a social contract that the committee's recognized, but that the social contract was never really written down. And I think one thing that we're thinking about, I wouldn't say struggling with, but thinking about with the committee is sort of the nature of that social contract. I think what the recent events have brought to the forefront is thinking about formalizing that in a certain way. So there's, I won't burden you with all the details, but I think some elements of that, are the expectations of universities, because we receive a lot of federal and state money. And of course, there's expectations. One is expertise, providing deep expertise in the disciplines that drive solutions to problems. An educated citizenry, we still believe strongly in the liberal arts model of educating young people in core competencies to be members of our society and democracy, access to education, educational access across groups and states, workforce preparation, creating research projects, and then importantly, extension and outreach. And we have expectations of the government. So there's two sides to every coin here. And on the government side, we'd expect academic freedom, independence from government intervention, upholding rights, human and civil rights, accountability, structures for rigorous peer reviewed. We really like the fact that grant applications are serious pieces of work themselves that are go through a rigorous peer review process before from the NSF or the NIH or the DoD, whoever it is, before it's funded. Regulations, which provide guidelines and laws for safe and ethical administration, and protection of intellectual property, which you'll know about, and resources, including tax exempt status, accreditation, and tuition. So we're looking at a number of pressing issues. One of the things I think that's come up, that will come up a lot, is diversification of funding. And not, there's a question here about how much University Cornell's relied on federal money from all these different sources for decades. And I think we've gotten into a groove of that. How should we think about that going forward? Maybe it's not as secure as we thought it was. And that's been the revelation of the past couple of years. And we should obviously have an economist. So I think about diversification and diversifying those funding streams. Maybe the private sector would be one, emphasizing state relationships, so we can think of other ways of diversifying, which would be very good. And then we have a number of emerging principles that the committees talked about, which are too extensive, I think. Happy to talk about them, but how we've gone, we obviously want to retain Cornell's DNA and the any person, any study, and doing the greatest good concepts, which we think run through the university like a thread, and keeping those, and a series of sort of core questions that the universe, that the committee will address as we go forward. I'm happy to go into any of those, but I'm not, it might take up too much time to get into the gory details, but that's a crude outline of sort of where the committee is. I think we're doing very well. I really like the putting it in historical context, both for universities writ large in the United States, but also for Cornell specifically. So why don't I just stop there?
Perfect.
And if you guys want to add or subtract, let me know.
Next slide, please. So I was on the sort of technology AI subcommittee, and you know, obviously, generative AI is just the latest in a longer lineage of information technologies that have really altered university practice, with social media being another key example. And if we're thinking on the 25, 50-year time frame, we have no idea what AI is going to look like. And so one of the principles here is, rather than trying to make predictions, the idea is more to figure out how to be resilient in the face of unpredictability. You know, there's been some pretty widespread agreement that, you know, it's hard to say exactly what that it was caused by social media or AI or whatever, but there are sort of different challenges for students entering college today compared to, you know, 10, 20 years ago, around mental health challenges, attention span challenges, like challenges around social interaction, lower, you know, not the sort of, I'm assuming that everyone comes in with foundations in writing and reading and math and things like that. And so one of the big questions for the university is thinking about, like, what are the core skills and experiences that the university wants to foster? What are the sort of faculties that may be compromised by AI use and that need to be amplified? And, you know, this could be things like emotional intelligence, human values like judgment, critical thinking, aesthetic development, and so on. And there's also lots of implications of AI in the context of research, both as a topic to study and as a tool to be used. And we want to try to strike a balance between being AI forward, but also being AI critical, having a critical lens thinking about AI. The university is really broad depth of disciplines, is something that's a real strength in terms of now a research approach to AI. There's also thinking about, wanting to not just be a passive recipient of technological change, but instead trying to be active drivers to try to center the priorities of the university and the public, rather than just big companies trying to make lots of money. And the outreach and the arts can help engage the public in these considerations of the consequences of technology and the need that it could address. And so sort of core questions that the AI subcommittee are thinking about are, how can universities be organized to allow us to adapt quickly and respond effectively to a rapidly changing landscape? What are the core skills and experiences that the university should focus on in an era of rapid technological change and unpredictably evolving workforce? Where do we need to alter our methods in research and teaching in order to assure that these skills and experiences are actually central for students? Where can Cornell serve as a living laboratory for and benefit from research innovations in AI? Should we have some protected spaces where AI is not involved? And what unique role can universities play in fostering technological development and use that benefits society?
Great, we can go to the next slide. So as you can tell, a lot of thought and effort has gone into understanding these different issues or pressures that universities are facing, and Cornell in particular. But that's a critical part of our work, but our work can't stop there if we're going to deliver on this charge of understanding where we need to go and where the future of Cornell and the future of the American University is. We have to understand how these pressures are bearing down on each one of the kind of functions, or we call them missions, of the university. So the next phase in our work, now that we've completed a kind of overview, understanding of these different pressures, is to look at the ways in which these pressures are affecting each one of these core issue areas: undergraduate education, graduate and professional education, research and public impact and community engagement. That's step one. And then understanding how these pressures are bearing down on each of these areas, what are some ways in which we as a university need to adjust or shift or rethink some of the things that we're doing? I want to highlight that each of these categories encompasses a lot of different areas. Under the public impact and community engagement, we are covering outreach and extension and the many different ways in which we have external public impact as a university. If we can go to the next slide. I want to give you a sense of our timeline and where we're headed and how we're having conversations across campus. So our committee was launched in September. We've spent the period between that launch in September and November talking about these different pressures that we've just given you a high-level overview of. And starting now in November and going all the way till March, we're going to engage in a robust discussion with the community, the many communities on campus, so that we are coming up with recommendations on the future of Cornell, the future of the American University, based on the input that we're getting from different stakeholders across the university. The strength and the merit of our recommendations will only be as strong as the engagement that we have with the different stakeholders. So if we can go to the next slide, I'll just quickly say, in our community events, this kind of an event is an example. We're going to do town halls beginning next week with staff, and then after Thanksgiving with faculty. We have invited speakers. There's an event tonight happening. John Tomasi is speaking from Heterodox Academy. We've already had a number of events. We're going to engage alums. We've already engaged in some debates, and we're going to engage in additional ones. So those are community events. If we can go to the next slide. We also want to stand up advisory panels so that we can reach a broader array of experts across campus from the different stakeholder groups, RTE faculty, trainees, staff, trustees, leadership, and more. And each one of those subcommittees, and undergraduate education, graduate education, research, and public impact, are going to stand up an advisory panel that will help to think through both what we're, the information we're receiving, and the recommendations that we're developing. Next slide. This is a long process, and we want to make sure that we're continually in dialogue with the community. So we will be providing kind of short form outputs. We've already had opinions in the daily, an opinion in the Daily Sun, and we're planning others. We're going to write op-eds on the national front. We want to make sure that as ideas and recommendations form, we're kind of having a broader discourse, both with the community and the outside outside stakeholders, not just within Cornell. We can go to the next slide. And we're having a host of individual meetings. In addition to the community events and the advisory panels, we're meeting one-on-one with folks who are interested in engaging with us around the questions that we're asking. Okay. After we engage in this process from November to March, we're gonna have a kind of feedback session. We're gonna come back to the community and say, here's what we've heard, and here's what we're thinking. We're gonna try to get a draft report to the provost by March, engage with the community again, and then a final report in May. That's an ambitious timeline, but it's one that we think is important given all the implications of the pressures that universities are facing. And then finally, we can go to the next slide. There are, and as I noted, a number of different events. We really encourage you to attend and to get your colleagues to attend the different events that we're engaged in. We wanna hear from you. We wanna hear your thoughts about the events. We want this to be a robust conversation. So there are town halls coming up, as I've noted. There are events that have already happened today, 5:30.
Yeah.
John Tomasi is gonna be speaking in
Goldman Smith.
Goldman Smith, thank you so much. We're visiting assemblies, staff and faculty town halls. You can use this QR code to register and to receive updates. And there is a website that you can reach out to with your questions, thoughts, insights. We really, really wanna make sure we're getting robust engagement with the community, and we appreciate your time.
And we have about 10 or minutes, I guess, on your agenda for Q&A.
Yes.
Advice, that would be very appreciated. It's a big remit.
First and foremost, thank you so much for that presentation. Go ahead and get on after that. Whatever questions,
I just have a question on, has there been consideration of having students on this committee to kind of the people on the receiving end of all of these actions and their input into as you make the report?
Such a great question. And there are so many different stakeholders across the university, and trying to figure out how to get input properly was a big task. The way we've decided to move forward is to have the committee structured as it is, kind of faculty committee, but to stand up these advisory panels, which will include students, to make sure that our one-on-ones are including students. That array of different, those array of different events, ways of engaging will absolutely include students. We can't envision a future of the university without understanding what students think and where they are in terms of the different areas that we're looking into. So that's an amazing point. We're doing it in those kind of series of events that we described.
We have just to follow up on that area. We have a meeting planned with the student assembly coming up. But we've also already met with the GPSA, and the GPSA has really been terrific as a partner, and is going to stand up its own expert panel as an ad hoc advisory focus group for us. And what we hope to develop then is have people who are really thoughtfully engaging in their own conversations, that then we can share in those conversations as well, so that the process of thinking through the future of the administration of the university is really a distributed one that we can all be thinking about at the same time. And our job is to kind of synthesize those visions and bring them together in something.
Thank you.
Can I add a footnote? I've heard exactly the same question, but from staff. And so we're doing, involved in my center and so forth, who are very interested in the committee. So I think our response would be something similar for staff. Maybe we could talk about how it might be different for students, but I think that the same mechanism is the way we would incorporate staff input.
Thank you. And then we see Wendy, followed by Jonathan.
Thanks, Irene. And thank you all for presenting. I'm actually the Employee Assembly Chair. So I really appreciate you all coming. I know that you've reached out to me to present to the Employee Assembly. Unfortunately, our dance card is full for this year, so you're going to be coming sometime in February. Just a comment and then a question. The comment is the town hall that's being held on Monday. This is the first that I've even heard of it. So I don't know if there's been any advertisement for it or anything. I know on that last slide it said, use the QR code to register for updates. I don't know that everyone is fully aware of that. Like I said, this is literally the first time I heard it. And plus, it's Thanksgiving week, and I'm going to come to the town hall, but I'm on vacation on Monday. So that's like timing wise seems a little weird. That's my comment. The question is for the advisory panel. I don't know if you'll address this when you come to the employee assembly or if you want to address it ahead of time, but we do have staff that want to be a part of this. We were actually a little bit dismayed by the fact that there weren't any staff on the initial committee, but now that I hear that you're going to have advisory panels, that's a step in the right direction. So I just want to know like how do you want to go about having staff involved in these advisory panels?
So Wendy, thank you for that. I'll take a quick stab at it and first say thank you for the notification that we need to improve our advertising. That's really important, and we will get on that immediately. On the standing up, I want to ask you actually for some feedback on that because we've been standing up these business to assemblies, and of course, I totally recognize that the employee assembly's dance card was full. It's crazy semester. But do you have suggestions of pathways that would be most advisable to get us more quickly to stand up some kind of group that would be engaged and conversant with us?
Off the top of my head, not really, because like I said, we only have just a handful more meetings between now and the end of the year. And staff right now are we're pretty focused on like if we're going to have jobs, basically,
Yeah, I
because
get
of the
that.
resilient Cornell, are people going to have jobs? Are there layoffs, with the restructuring or layoffs, those sort of things? So that's kind of where a lot of staff do have their laser focus. I mean, we might be able to squeeze you all into like maybe 5, 10 minutes into one of our last meetings, but we're already like doubling up a couple of meetings. In fact, on December 3rd, we have President Kolakoff and Vice President Chief Human Resources Officer Christine Lovely coming for their annual visit or like semi-annual, once a semester visit to the EA. But then right after them, we have Deputy Provost Avery August coming to speak about the Task Force on Institutional Voice. So like I said, we're already kind of doubling up on things.
Yeah, you guys are really busy. So, what I would suggest is we'll talk as a committee and take this really to heart and think about whether we need to do additional town hall kinds of things or more focused kinds of things. And we'll try to come up with a strategy to maybe keep, and keep lines of communication open with you to help think through this. If that sounds like a way forward, that's
Yeah.
very
Yeah,
reliable.
that's fine. And also, just as an FYI, we have an employee assembly meeting tomorrow, so I will be sure to inform the EA members of the upcoming town hall and make sure they spread the word as well.
I'll just quickly build on Adam's comments. We expect to need to do more town halls. We balance that it's a difficult week, as you know, Wendy, but we also want to move quickly and make sure that we're getting voice and input as soon as possible. We expect that we'll need to do additional town halls after the holidays.
Thank you for that. Jonathan?
Yeah, thank you very much for being here and presenting to us. My question deals with the composition of the committee with respect to balance between different disciplines and representation across colleges. I noticed that the presentation focused heavily on an interrelationship between government sponsorship of research and also all the different ways that our research impacts society. And certainly, in addition to mental health, you have a significant portion of the federal government's budget dealing with healthcare, biomedical technology. I was curious, as far as I can tell, there's only one engineer on the panel, and there's multiple representatives, perhaps from the same departments in other spaces. And I would think that if this committee is supposed to be charged with synthesizing the input from other people, that you would want to have the broadest collection of discipline diversity and ideas in that committee. And so I'm curious, in terms of the composition of the committee, how that can be achieved.
Jonathan, really appreciate the comment. The task of putting this committee together, we were asked to join. We didn't put the committee together, but the task of putting the committee together on the part of the provost, a kind of really complicated effort of making sure that there's representation from each college, that there's disciplinary representation, And I hear you completely. I can say, and I'll ask my colleagues as well, we now meet basically weekly. We've been having robust conversations across all of these different issues. And my sense is that there's input and voice across the different disciplines, and that it's a kind of setting in which we're able to collect a lot of different ways of thinking about the university. There's no one perfect way to get at all of the different stakeholders on the university. I think at the university, I think this was an effective way to do this, and all of those other elements of advisory panels and one-on-one meetings, internal and external, are our way to kind of make that a bit more robust. If you feel like there are elements that aren't being included, let's have a conversation and make sure that we're talking to folks that can help us have that perspective.
You could send a note to FAU@cornell.edu with ideas, recommendations, and other people that we really need to talk to, and we really do take those to heart.
I mean, I guess I've already done that, so I will do it again.
Can I just add a point to that? Because I think the committee has engineering, but we also have theoretical physics. We also have data science and CS. And my sense in the committee's discussions is that there's actually a good balance across social science, humanities, as well as STEM oriented. And I think we have conduits into more through those faculty into applied physics and into more other types of engineering if we need that. I mean, my sense of our discussions is that they're very balanced across disciplines.
Maybe at the risk of overdoing this, I'll just say one more thing, and that's to say, actually, 9 years at Cornell, I've never been in so frequently in a room with folks across so many different disciplines with so many different perspectives about of the university and what we should be doing. It's not perfect by any means, but I think it's robust.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, am I alone in
Yeah.
this view?
Yeah.
Ariel, you and I agree
I
totally.
agree.
Yeah.
In the interest of time, I know you guys have somewhere else to be. I'll just
One more question.
yeah,
Take
one more
somebody
question.
has a hand up.
Okay. Sure. Just 2 seconds. I see an email, but is there a web presence anywhere?
We have a website that we're still working on. There
Okay.
should be some elements. We're going to post those issues that we were discussing. Have their We're calling them 2 pages, but they're a little more than 2 pages. Those will be posted on that website, so you'll be able to read in more detail all of the different elements of the issues that we talked about. And we're hoping to make the website more robust as we go along.
Thank you.
The first QR code on the slide presentation will take you to that website. So it should be able to go. Thank you all so much for having us. We really appreciate it. Please do send comments, thoughts, critiques. We are very open.
Come to events.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time. Okay, so next on our agenda, we have the VP of University Relations, Kyle Kimball, who is supposed to be here to speak to us about some of the things revolving around ECAT. Seeing that he is not here yet, I'm not
Be
I
sure.
think he's virtual. He's going to be in virtual. Okay, so he gets to join us virtually. So I think this is something we can loop back to once he gets here. And in the meantime, we can kind of go over some of our assembly reports. So first on our list, we have student assembly.
When Azor is available.
Huh?
Yeah, so we're going
Oh,
over assembly reports. So your November 6th and 13th meeting, although we have many representatives here from student assembly that can speak to it.
Oh, sorry, I haven't been at UA in a while. I just last week I was at an agronomy competition I've been studying for all semester. So that's that. I'll be back now forever. Student assembly has been doing more and more byline stuff. We only have three more to approve this week. We're going to be holding special meetings because we are behind schedule as a result of that. Hopefully, none of these three get rejected, and we will be back in drawing board. In terms of resolutions, passed one about accessible ramps on campus, which I know is going to be taking up really this week. some internal discussions. I don't know. I definitely missed some of our agenda items for meetings.
We now have
fully staff. We have freshmen and transfer reps. So. I think I'm going to consider that it.
Awesome. Any questions for Student Assembly and any of those updates?
At the risk of opening up a story, you mentioned that you hope the bylines aren't rejected. Is that in? Presume that some were. Was there?
Oh yeah, all the ones that we went over last week. We're like 4 weeks behind schedule, behind what we originally planned. Because a ton have been rejected and reconsidered. It's fine. It's part of the process. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay, so let's just jump back to, thank you for that update, Student Assembly. We see that Kyle Kimball is here with us. Welcome, Kyle.
Thank you.
Yes, and essentially you can just go ahead and introduce yourself to us so most of us know who you are, and you can talk to us a bit about what I presume is the TCAT things that we had mentioned earlier.
Yes. So my name is Kyle Kimball. I am the Vice President of University Relations, and I really appreciate you having me here. And I work very closely with Jessica, who you're all familiar with, and in the University Relations Office. I really appreciate you inviting me or accepting, allowing you to invite myself to this convening. Originally, when I wanted to do this, we were in the throes of negotiations with TCAT, and I wanted to, I know this is something that the university faculty, staff, students all really rely on in both their professional and personal lives. And so I wanted to folks to understand what was going on. There's a lot of misinformation. I'm happy to report that today we actually came to a deal, an understanding with TCAT to help it get its get on a path to sustainability. So again, very happy to report that I actually have good news to share with these groups. I'll just explain a little bit the relationship. So right now we have a relationship with TCAT where we have what's called an underwriter commitment, which is essentially just a financial backer. That's Cornell, the city, and the county. We all split the burden evenly. We all spend about $1 million a year just to financially support TCAT. On top of that, Cornell pays what's called a service agreement that essentially is tied to ridership. And the more people ride it, the more incentives there are for TCAT to roll more buses and that kind of thing. And so there's what's called a service agreement that essentially at its basic level is about $3.3 million a year. So collectively, Cornell pays about $4.3 million a year to help either for the ridership that TCAT provides and or as an underwriter, because we obviously want to make sure that TCAT has the financial backing. In this last round, TCAT came to ourselves, the city and the county, and said, we need another 500,000. So our contribution at Cornell would go from 1 million to 1.5 million, and the same would be for the city, the county. So an additional 1.5 million of infusion into TCAT. And the issue with TCAT is that, you know, like any bus company, their business model, the product that they're selling is rides. The problem is that the demand for that product has not really recovered from COVID. So less people are riding the bus. And I would say that's number one. Number two is that Cornell students, faculty, and staff are about 70 to 75% of the ridership. So those two things mean that you have a bus system that's serving a relatively small area for $1.50, but it's not enough people to keep the system sustained because there are long run rides that go out into further reaches of Tompkins County that are not necessarily as well performing as those that are moving around the city. So what we agreed to today was that we would, instead of doing 500, we would do a smaller amount, around 280,000, and that we would instead really focus on adapting and changing TCAT's business plan to help it be more sustainable, to also put some sunlight measures on their financials. TCAT is a not-for-profit, it's not a public benefit corporation, and so it currently does not post its financials online. It does not post its ridership or any of the information that the public might want to know about how their bus company is being run. So one of the things we fought very hard for was making sure that that information is public and that people can truly understand what was happening. I think the biggest piece is that even with that 1.5 million contribution that they were asking us to provide, TCAT would still lose about $2 million next year and would pretty much eat into its reserves in about 3 years or so, depending on what kind of changes they made. So we were very concerned about the short-term problems that face TCAT in terms of solvency, and what it might require of the three underwriters later, if we didn't fix the problem now. And so we really focused on getting to an agreement where we could try to begin fixing the problem now rather than delaying it to the future. And again, putting on some more sunlight measures to make sure that the public understands what's going on. So I just wanted to let that's really it. I just wanted to explain that to the extent that there were, a sense of tense negotiations or that Cornell was being withholding of monies, any of those situations. I just want to make sure that people sort of understood because it's such an essential part of everybody's lives and also such an essential part of Ithaca, that I wanted to make sure people understood that we are, in my mind at least, acting in a very concerned and caring way for the future of TCAT by making sure we're having the hard conversation now or soon rather than waiting until it's a much bigger problem. But that's really it. I'm also happy to answer any questions that folks have about TCAT or some of the other issues that we're facing. So I'm here and happy to open myself up to any questions that folks might have.
Thank you so much, Kyle. We're going to open a Q question and answer period for just about 15 minutes.
Okay.
So in order of who kind of raise your hand first, Wendy followed by Jonathan, or Wendy, Jonathan, and then Nick. So Wendy, go ahead.
Thanks, Irene, and thanks for joining us, Kyle. Good to see you again.
Hey, Wendy.
I'm just curious, is so Cornell, City of Ithaca, and Tompkins County are the underwriters. Has there ever been any discussion of having Ithaca College chip in anything? I mean, I know TCAT doesn't run to the extent that they do on our campus, on Ithaca College's campus, but still they're a portion of the riders and the users. So, split it four ways instead of three, maybe.
Ithaca College is not one of the underwriters. I think it's a really good question. They're not one of the underwriters. They are, however, contributing something. I actually don't know. It's only recent information that I heard that they were willing to contribute something. I actually don't know how much it is, but they are beginning a relationship with TCAT to and beginning to contribute. I think the other party that's obvious out there that is not contributing is Cuca Health. So that could be another potential solution for the future, but I'm not sure that any conversations have happened with TCAT and them. I don't know.
Jonathan?
Yeah, thank you very much. I was curious, I appreciate the sunlight provisions that you were talking about, and I was curious in my own limited reading of the various things that TCAT seems to have gone through over the last couple of years. How much of this solvency issue is a function of the purchasing of various buses with maintenance issues versus salaries and contract issues? I'm just wondering if the supply of people is not something that's increasing as fast as these various costs, such that there would never be a way to fix that.
I mean, it's all part of the soup. I mean, in terms of the operational costs, the buses, wages. So certainly part of the increase in the operating costs that are happening there. There's two other components that I would consider. One is, and the biggest one is that ridership just hasn't rebounded since COVID, number one. And two, they're very concerned about losing. So it's a complex formula of they do get a lot of federal and state grants and to run the system. And there is some concern that in the era of belt tightening, those may go away. It's a complex formula that I want to sort of go into, but essentially ridership helps grants. The more ridership, the more grants they get, because the state grant is tied to ridership and miles. So the key to all of this is ridership and making sure that the ridership is paying. That's the other piece.
So you would say that if we had the same ridership pre-COVID, we would be balanced?
I haven't done the calculation, so I can't, but it'd be certainly a lot closer. Yeah, for sure.
Thank you. Nick?
Yeah. Thank you, Kyle, for your reason, or for your discussion of the negotiations and the completion of those negotiations with TCAP. I wanted to ask about a comment you made about underperforming lines that go kind of around the Tompkins County region. My name's Nick. I'm the president of the GPSA. And I think I speak for a growing number of graduate students when I say that unaffordable housing prices in the immediate Ithaca region have pushed a larger and larger proportion of our student body out into those, quote, remote regions of Tompkins County. For example, as far as Dryden on the 43 line, or as far as Lansing on 32 and 30. And so those bus lines are actually becoming quite important because unlike the good old days, graduate students do not live in College Town like they used to. And so I was hoping you could shed some light on that and what Cornell's proposal is for those routes.
Well, so I would say that we are not, as Cornell, actually trying to run the bus company. So we're not necessarily telling TCAT what to do on which routes. I would say that's just not our role in this relationship. And I think that's something that TCAT is sensitive about, that we are not running their bus company. However, I think the goal is, when I say underperforming routes, it's not to say that we should cut those routes. That's not really the implication. It's that we need to make sure that either, because you have puts and takes in any of these kind of public infrastructure asset relationships. And so there are going to be some that underperform and hopefully some that overperform so that you have, the system balances itself. So there have been some discussions by TCAT of being concerned about certain underperforming routes. I think our role as the underwriter and as a service provider is there's a whole process if they are planning to reduce service, a whole public process if they're planning to reduce service or cut routes. That is not something that we would dictate or we would certainly advocate for through the process, but we wouldn't necessarily decide which routes they keep and take. But the idea is that you don't have to cut routes, but that you make sure that there's enough cross subsidy through the system that you can have routes that are not profitable subsidized by routes that are.
Hello, Kyle. Jason from GPSA. One of the questions I wanted to ask was, you mentioned bringing sunlight to TCAT. Could you elaborate a bit more on the goal behind that and what sort of information specifically you want to bring to light?
I was pretty struck that when I have talked to people that us giving $1.5 million means they would still lose $2 million. I think people didn't totally, most people I've talked to had no idea just the numbers of this and the magnitude of the potential loss. So that's number one. I think number two is that if you go on TCAT's webpage right now, you cannot find the financials. You basically would have to go to an open meeting, which is, I think, every third or fourth Thursday at 4, to understand what's going on. And I don't think that's okay. I think you need to have people to be able to see the numbers and then be accessible. Because I think people, and my goal really was just to make people, more people aware than it currently are about sort of the issues that TCAT faces. That was my number one goal. And I think number two, just, having worked in government for a long time, different not-for-profits, I've worked on making sure the East River Ferry here in New York City is, we started that from scratch and we've now turned it into a self-sustaining or close to self-sustaining ferry service. Again, with the same relationship of puts and takes in terms of some lines are subsidizing others, but you have to make sure that the community understands what's going on because it's their bus system, it's not ours. It's not even TCATS. It's all of our bus systems. And the more people know, the more participation we can have, I think the clearer the solutions will be.
Yeah, if I may quickly follow up on that, one of the things that you mentioned and has been followed up on in terms of questions is ridership. Is Cornell doing something about that in terms of communicating with Cornell students or various faculty to encourage bus usage or otherwise work with TCAT about advertising where lines may or may not be, as you say, underperforming or if they're not reaching the intended audience, per se?
I think there's I don't necessarily know, but we definitely have not, as far as I know. I mean, I've been here for 2 months, so and I know Jennifer Tavares is on the call. Maybe she has a longer history, if I'm saying something wrong, but I'm not aware of any efforts that have been made by Cornell to specifically publicize certain routes. I think one of the issues that we don't even actually really know right now as an underwriter what those routes are, which is again like just a basic level concern of the information that we have. And we probably could do more in terms of publicizing TCAT and using the bus internally. I mean, at the same time, I live very close to campus, and I realize not everyone does, per Nick's comment earlier about affordability. And the bus, I think it's the number 10 bus that picks it's, there are days where I see a line of 100 people trying to get on the bus. And so I think what's going to help at the same time when I talk to folks from the employee assembly, that seems to be their number one concern is that the bus doesn't show up. So we've got to fix like the reliability piece. We have to have enough buses for the 100 people line, and we've got to have enough timely buses that show up at the remote parking lot on a rainy day so that people can depend on it. And it
We
seems
have
like neither of
time.
which is happening.
We have time for only a few more questions. Nick, and then Christian, and then we're going to close the question period.
Hi, Kyle. It's Nick again. Thank you for
Hey,
the
Nick.
clarification. GPSA last year had TCAT come to present. It was very informative to hear a little bit about their business model and what their plans are for expansion. You've mentioned the university's relationship to TCAT being an underwriter and from TCAT being a consolidated area transit system, which was the unification of Tompkins County, Ithaca, and Cornell Bus Service. I'm curious what the university's formal position is on the responsibility of being an underwriter, because they're not our buses, but they're all of our buses. But I'm just trying to understand better where does Cornell's responsibility start and stop? And, should Cornell propose a route or to get rid of a route, what should that mean to TCAT, if you could clarify?
So my sense of it is that, we rely on TCAT to move our students, faculty, and staff around. And that helps, if we can get that mix right, then it helps with potentially easing parking concerns to the extent that people drive instead of take the bus. It makes people feel more confident about the system. So our vested interest from either a sustainability piece, cutting down carbon from driving is and affordability, right? It's much cheaper to buy or to get a TCAT ride, which is free, versus paying $800 a year to park in the remote parking lot. So our vested interest is making sure we can move people around the campus. Number one. Number two, it was, I think my understanding was very expensive for Cornell to run its own circulator. So, we have a vested interest in making sure that they are doing that for us. And that's why we have the service agreement. That's why the underwriter agreement. But that's the most important goal to us. I'm not sure I'm answering your question if you want to re-ask it, but that's the most important thing to us.
All right, that's sufficient. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mine was more just a comment. I feel like a large reason why at least students during school day don't take the bus is because it tends to be actually slower than walking.
Yeah.
And that I feel like is actually more like a culture issue, just like a constant stream of students that like walk across the road in front of the bus and don't let the bus go. And then in fact, if you're on the bus, they won't let you off, so you're kind of held hostage there, and you can't even like be like,
Yeah.
oh God, I can walk instead. So I don't know. It's just really like a comment. I feel like perhaps a reason why ridership might be low is because there is, I don't know what the word is, like respect or like little regard for like buses. Like, I try to like let the bus go first because I'm like, okay, there's 30 people on the bus and I'm one person, but not everyone thinks that way. So perhaps that's something to consider if there's like, I don't know, marketing campaigns or something like that along down the line that might improve ridership.
One of the things they say here in New York City is, if you're in a hurry, walk. If you have time, take the bus. That's the attitude here in New York City. So it's not unique to Cornell campus.
With that, let's go ahead and thank Kyle for his time.
And if anyone has other questions, my email address is kek269@cornell.edu. Happy to answer any questions, or Jessica knows where to find me.
Thank you so much, Kyle.
All right, take care. Thank you.
Okay. So with that, we can conclude with our assembly reports. I believe next we had GPSA. How was your meeting?
Thank you, Irene. We had a very busy meeting last Monday, November 10th. We had two presentations, one that you saw today from the Future of the American University Committee. We also invited Cornell Dining for a presentation on various cafe services around the campus and how they're serving graduate students. We had one resolution that came up addressing the $5 million in cuts to Cornell University Library on the heels of 7. Some odd change million over the past 15 years. And so calling for the reversal of those cuts and also to kind of expand funding for library services. And then we also have the kind of initial recommendation update for the 2026-2028 SAF allocation. And so that was our topic of discussion. And we'll be continuing that at our next meeting on November 24th.
Thank you. Yeah, and if I may quickly mention the special grants initiative, the deadline closed. And so in the next 2 weeks or so, we're going to be getting graduate students to review 58 proposals. Woo.
We're very excited.
Awesome. Thank you for the update. Any questions for GPSA? What is your proposed SAF allocation?
The number fluctuates by the day, but around $100.
Yeah, which it
So
would be a decrease.
down from 110.
So I also
That's
see
not happening.
you, Ellen, online. What is your question?
Yeah, I have a GPSA question. I'm wondering if the GPSA or some other graduate student group at some point, perhaps not as quickly as in a semester, but perhaps later this year, is going to present some kind of an update on how the first year under unionization has gone.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, Ellen. At this point, GPSA is in communications with the union to kind of formalize our relationship as kind of seeing the graduate student experience from two different lenses, being from employment perception and also from academic and university relations. And so at this point, we're really trying to find kind of our equilibrium now with the union in place. But this is definitely a topic that GPSA is thinking a lot about these days. But thank you for the the suggestion.
Any other questions? All right, thank you, GPSA. Next we have employee assembly. I know you have a meeting tomorrow, but is there any updates?
So on the 5th, we had Kathy Berkren come and give a presentation about professional development opportunities for staff. As you said, we do have a meeting tomorrow. We're going to be joined by Stephen Burke, who is the program director for CME, which is the Cornell Experience Modernization Initiative. We're going to be working on a priority poll for staff and hope in the hopes of getting it out maybe before the holidays or soon after we return from winter break. As mentioned previously, President Kotlikoff and Vice President Chief Human Resources Officer Lovely will be joining us on December 3rd, along with Deputy Provost Avery August for the institutional or the task force on institutional voice. And that's about it.
Thank you so much. Any questions for EA?
Yes. Wendy, it's Andrea. What is your survey that you're looking to get out before? What does that entail?
Andrea, it's the priorities poll that we've done in the past. I think the last one we did was about 3 years ago. We collaborate with human resources and they kind of assist us with the questions and the vetting. It's just kind of to get a pulse of what staff feel are priorities. And then once we get the results back, they'll be kind of parsed out to the standing employee assembly committees. So welfare committee, benefits and policy committee, education committee, and then if there's any kind of stragglers, more than likely it'll be like the executive committee to see like how we can start addressing those priorities or bringing them to the forefront so that university leadership is aware that these are the things that are on the minds of the staff
and on the minds of staff for the EA to be working on, not necessarily HR.
Correct, for the okay. EA to work on.
Thank
yep
you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. So next we have Faculty Senate. Do you have any updates?
Well, we lost Eve.
Yeah, we lost Eve. Is anyone else able to provide?
She sent something in the chat.
Did she?
She did say she had to leave.
Had to leave.
To that talk at 5:30.
Okay, thank you for that. So for Faculty Senate, there was an FAU, so the Futures Presentation, 3 Teaching Professor Proposals in Arts and Science, CHE and BET, I think. There's a Task Force on Institutional Voice, a Revised Draft Resolution on the Overuse of Temporary Suspensions. Okay, so that is the update we have. Is there anyone present that would like to add to that? If not, we can go ahead and move on. Okay, awesome. So now we can move on to our committee reports. First, we have Executive Committee.
Yes, we've been talking a bit, just a reminder of next December 2nd is the president is coming to speak to us. There are certain things that were topics that were submitted for consideration, and then there was a Qualtrics survey that expired today at 4. Hopefully people had a chance to provide comments and questions in that particular format. And I think that's really just getting us ready to round out our UA meetings for from now until January.
Yeah. Awesome. In addition to that, we've been in coordination with Dean Love about listening session on the Student Code of Conduct and Procedures. They want to host a special meeting with us as the University Assembly and that is supposed to be about an hour in some meeting with the welcome introduction and informational video that's going to be about 11 minutes, and then an open floor comment period. So we figured that the best date to have that meeting would be on February 3rd, I think is the day that I initially suggested. Yeah, Tuesday, February 3rd at 4:45. We're considering a Zoom only style special meeting just for accessibility purposes. And likely more details on that to come. Any questions for exec? Seeing that there is none, we can now go ahead and move on to our campus codes committee.
Hi. So we met last week. We discussed one initial proposal on the specifics of the code revision procedure, or actually the actual revisions to the student code of conduct. We also started drafting two additional resolutions, one about the jurisdiction of the review process and trying basically to get University Assembly to have some jurisdiction about that again, and then a second resolution about the University Assembly and its ability to regulate its own interactions with respect to central administration. So those are, I would guess, ongoing. Our goal was to try to get some of those ready by the end of the year, but we're running out of time. So that's where we are.
Absolutely. Thank you for that update. Is there anything that we can do to help in support of those resolutions or anything that you're doing in campus codes?
I mean, I would welcome people's efforts to wordsmith asynchronously. We have these documents, they're moving along inside a box folder. It's just need people to do the work.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Any questions for Campus Codes Committee? Seeing that there's none, we can go ahead and move on to the Campus Welfare Committee. Jason?
Yeah, indeed. No major updates from last meeting. As mentioned, we will plan to meet sometime in early December. I'm in contact with some of the other assemblies to reach out with their welfare ask committees. But otherwise, I hope everyone has a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Any questions for campus welfare? Okay, seeing that there's none, we can go ahead and move on to our site committee. Amir?
Yeah, so we're wondering R11, which is sent to President Khalifov from the Student Assembly, being, if he approves it or if he doesn't, hopefully we plan a meeting soon to discuss like rewording it, like the language. A lot of people have pointed that it could be maybe more appropriate and inclusive, and I spoke with the authors from Student Assembly about it, and they are fine with us rewording and bringing the version to UA depending on President Khalifov's response and going with it.
Good, thank you. Any questions for site? As much. So you said that your current resolution is banking on the reception from Paltikoff on the Student Assembly version of that?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And so if he rejects it, then you're just going to scrap the resolution, or if he accepts it, are you then going to move forward with the resolution? What kind of
I feel
reception are
like it
you waiting
depends
for?
on his feedback on the resolution, what he says, and then if it includes the language not being inclusive enough, rewording it, bringing it again to the SA and the UA vote.
Okay. And then do you know on average what the timeline looks like usually for him to respond to student assembly
I
resolutions?
would refer that to Zoro. I think since it passed, I conveyed it 2 or 3 weeks ago. We should have another 1-ish week to wait for a response.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Seeing that there's no other questions, we can go ahead and move on to our liaison reports. First, we have the Campus Planning Committee. Wendy?
Ooh, I have news to report because we finally met.
Awesome.
Yeah, so the meeting was November 7th. There was a discussion about the botanics. Cornell Botanics are going to be putting in an East Asian garden. So they showed us their design plans and stuff for that. Also, improvement of the pathways on North Campus when the North Campus residential expansion was put in. Some of the pathways were wider, and then there weren't like barricades or I don't want to use barricades. Andrea, help me out with the word that I'm looking for. They're like little collapsible stanchions kind of thing. But basically, cars are thinking that it's, or drivers are thinking that it's a actual roadway, not a pathway. So they're looking into how can they improve that to make it more visible to both drivers and pedestrians that it is a pedestrian pathway, not for cars to be driving upon. And then there was also an update on the Maplewood 2 project, which is not on campus but close to campus. And then also Hillel is going to be a new Hillel building is going to be on University Ave.
Thank you for that update. Any questions? Okay, so we can go ahead and move on to the Coalition for Sexual Violence Prevention, Ellen.
Nothing to report, thank you.
Awesome. Okay, we can now move on to the Sustainable Cornell Council Carbon Neutral Campus Steering Committee, Victoria.
I still have not received any communications for the committee meetings.
Is that the same for the Education Engagement Steering Committee as well?
Yes.
Yeah, indeed. That's unfortunate, but thank you for that update.
Yes, and just in case, if I need to like provide to make sure that my emails are correct, because I do have my EA email, my Cornell email as well. So if you need anything from me to make that happen, let me know.
Sounds good. Thank you. And then next we have still the Sustainable Cornell Council campus, but now the Operations Steering Committee. Ishan, any updates regarding that?
Same thing with me. Nothing major, like no communication yet.
Okay, come on, kids, Sustainable Cornell. All right. So next we can go ahead and move on to open forum. Is any, oh, Wendy. Yes, Wendy.
I just have a really quick question. So for liaison reports, did we ever get anything from for the Student Health Advisory Council from them saying that we no longer have a liaison?
So yeah, basically the Office of Assemblies, yeah, we had Jessica and Eric go ahead and figure out what was going on with that, and they formally told them that was then now conveyed to us by extension that they're just no longer having that position. Righty. Anything else that people would like to bring to open forum? Good news, bad news.
Already wish people a happy Thanksgiving. That's all I got.
Absolutely that. Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely happy Thanksgiving. We'll see you guys next time. If there's nothing else to add to that, I, welcome any motion to adjourn. Oh,
Unless, but one last thing is that when the president comes, if we can get folks here in person, I think that's preferred if it works on December 2nd.
awesome. That's great.
I think it always goes well if we're able to get people here. I know some people are 100% remote, and that's fine. But it's one of those things that it just when we have a whole room, I think it's awesome.
Thank you for that. I agree. And for those that can come in person, please do. And we're going to try to start promptly so people can arrive as soon as possible. And so that we don't fall into the trap that we usually do and starting 5 to 10 minutes later than our desired time, that would also be great. I will now look kindly on any motion to adjourn. Okay, second? All right, with that, meeting is now adjourned. Thank you.
But I think it was you.
Yeah.